Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Silencing the peace waves. One of the Middle East's only Christian media sources is severely crippled by Israeli bombs in Lebanon. And speaking out for Cuban freedom. Castro's daughter turned dissident speaks about her unusual relationship with her father. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining us. Dozens of people continue to die daily in the conflict that is tearing Israel and Lebanon apart, making the humanitarian toll from over 3 weeks of war just staggering. And besides the civilian homes and infrastructure that are being destroyed, one source of hope for the Middle East has been crippled by Israeli bombs. The region's biggest Christian television station is struggling to maintain its peace-building mission in Lebanon after its transmission and communications towers were recently bombed. I spoke to Telelumière's director of programming, Marie-Thérèse Kraidi, about the extent of damage and what it means for the future of the station and for peace in the Middle East.
The current conflict has affected the whole Lebanese territory and regions. Mostly the humanitarian side of the country is deplorable. As for us, for the TV station, we have been hit in six of our broadcast stations that cover the whole Lebanon. Have been hit. The broadcast was affected in 50% of the Lebanese territories.
Is it fair to say that Telelumière is the biggest Christian media outlet in Lebanon and perhaps even in the Middle East?
Well, it could be said because Telelumière has now been broadcasting for 16 years. It's the only Christian Catholic TV station in the Middle East and in Lebanon. And it covers the whole world with its satellite transmission. And the station is broadcasts Christian programming and social, cultural, humanitarian aspects of all the programs that you have.
I know that part of your programming mission is to provide the Christian message of hope, of peace and forgiveness. Are you able to continue that message even though your television antennas have been affected?
Yeah, so far we have the only station broadcasting is covering the Beirut area, and we're trying to fix the others, but I know that the damages are in millions, and we already are in need of and shortage of money as usual because the station is non-commercial and we only rely on donations. We'll be trying to fix our antennas, but our production hasn't stopped. We are also broadcasting via satellite to the whole world, and in Lebanon, in many regions, we can be reached via satellite. So our production has been increasing. We have been increasing spiritual programs and patriotic programs. We feel that we have a big role now in helping people to overcome the difficulties, to pray and to have some hope in their life and to be really close to God.
Why do you think that Telelumière was targeted in the first place? And have other Christian stations, radio or television, have they been targeted as well?
Well, mainly the bombs targeted the broadcast of many television stations in Lebanon, but I think they were targeting the Manar station, the broadcast of the Hezbollah station. And all the television stations are close together in the best strategic regions for the broadcast. So that's why the station has been affected. But we have had a total destruction in our structures and our antennas. And I know that, yes, many Lebanese stations have been affected. But the difference is that I think they can make it and build back easily their broadcast. But it's very difficult for us because the losses are very, very large.
From what I understand, one of the antennas that was hit was one of the most technologically advanced in there in the Middle East.
Yes, it's a new one, and it has been covering a very large area of Lebanon, mostly in the south, where it's difficult to reach. And this antenna has been built recently to give the most efficient broadcast for these areas. And this one has been totally destroyed, and it is the most it was the most important one covering many regions of the country.
Are you able to report on the current conflict? And does this reporting, your reporting, differ from other Lebanese media coverage?
We usually don't broadcast any political news, and we don't broadcast any news. But since the conflict started, we have been focusing mainly on the humanitarian side of the tragedy. We have been trying to create a hotline to help people to connect together, to find where they can get help, where they can get relief. We have been having prayer programs, and we've been covering this, the issues of the refugees and the people who have been displaced. But we don't cover the political side and not the conflict, you know, on as it has been happening, because we don't put any violent scenes on our station, on our TV.
Whereas other stations are giving more some of the more devastating and the more violent coverage.
Yes, we have. Yes, our coverage is focusing mainly on helping people to overcome this tragedy, on prayer and on the humanitarian side of the issue, to give people hope, you know, because people need to have some programs or to listen to some programs giving them hope in the future and some faith in God. And we need to do this instead of broadcasting only tragic events and dramatic scenes.
Hundreds of thousands of people, mostly Shiites, but also some Christians and Sunnis, have been forced out of their homes in the south. Entire villages have been destroyed. Where are these people going to go when the fighting is over? Have people been talking about this?
Yes, of course. And let me tell you something about the role of the Christian church in Lebanon. It's amazing, you know. All the schools in Lebanon, the Catholic schools and the Christian schools, are working hard to give housing for all the refugees, and the university students, and the Red Cross, and Caritas, and, you know, all the church organizations are working very, very hard in Lebanon to help all the deported and the displaced people. But we hope that after the war, we will have some relief also from the outside to help these people build back their homes. And now I know we have a crisis, especially because we are going to start the schools in 2 months. So we still don't know where the people will go. But I just like to emphasize on the great role that the church is doing in Lebanon in helping all these deported and displaced people.
What do people there think of the new UN resolution aimed at a cessation of hostilities?
Well, what we need is really a complete ceasefire, and we need peace. That's what we need, and that's what we want, because the last 3 weeks have been devastating, and it's a nightmare. Nobody expected that this will happen to us. So people here are expecting peace and nothing but peace now, and we need to have our life back and our country back the way it was before. And we need to trust that we won't go back to another war, because every 10 years Lebanon is facing a devastating war. So we need peace, and we need to cease all the hostilities and all the fire.
Marie-Thérèse, what would Lebanon, or even the Middle East as a whole, what would it be like without a television like Telelumière?
Well, it's frightening to see the Middle East and Lebanon without Telelumière, because the station really plays a major role in strengthening the dialogue between all the Lebanese community, all the different communities in Lebanon and in the Middle East, especially the Muslim and the Christian sides. And the station has a major role in peace in this region. It's broadcasting from the smallest country, and it is maybe the smallest and the poorest station, but the role of Telelumière and Nursat is huge. It gives the message of hope, love, and peace for the world. in Lebanon, it is very needed because it was created after the war. It helped a lot the society to overcome many difficulties and many differences, to understand each other, and especially on the level of the dialogue and of the coexistence between many religions. So I think Tele Lumière has a great role to play, and I hope that we will get support from all over the world to help us continue in our mission. I just like to tell all the listeners that we want them to share with us prayers for peace for Lebanon. We really need all the support and all the prayers because we are living a very difficult time, and Lebanon is a great country. It doesn't deserve anything that's happening to it. It's a real a holy land, and we really need peace in Lebanon.
Marie-Thérèse Kraidi, the director of programming for the Christian television station Tele Lumière, speaking there to me from Beirut. Castro's regime was carrying out one of the harshest crackdowns on dissidents ever when I sat down for a talk with Alina Fernandez in 2003. Some 75 dissidents were jailed that year with sentences up to 27 years. Three others were killed for trying to escape the island. Alina was born out of wedlock in 1956, before the 1959 revolution that brought her father to power. Her mother was a Havana socialite who kept her daughter's parentage a secret until Alina was about 10 years old. But Fidel paid frequent visits to their home, paying special attention to Alina, or sometimes none at all. Since she fled Cuba dressed as a Spanish tourist in 1993, Alina has been part of the Cuban opposition living in the United States and is a radio host and author of the book Castro's Daughter, an exile's memoir of Cuba. Alina told me that she had a mixed relationship with her father that turned from sweet to sour as she grew up, as she began to understand the scope of injustice in her country.
I escaped from Cuba in 1993, the end of December. Now I live in America after being turning around.
You are also, I believe, Fidel Castro's daughter.
That's what they say.
Are you or not?
Yes, I think I am.
What do you mean you think you are?
Nothing is secure. You know that.
And your mother?
My mother still lives in Cuba.
Tell me a little bit of your story. Why is it that you felt you had to escape from Cuba?
Well, I've been a dissident down in Cuba for a few years, and, you know, it's, why you disagree with the regime is first of all, is a sensation or a feeling of uncomfortability, and then is a feeling that some injustice is being done to your people, and then you decide that you break up, and in Cuba is an afraid thing to do.
What sort of life were you living in Cuba before you came to the U.S.?
The sort of life I was living in Cuba, as anybody else, is a very controlled and repressed life. There is no choice for us in Cuba in what religion to educate our children, because religion is forbidden, or still was until the Pope went down there. You don't have the choice of a career because they decided for you. You don't have any freedom to go away from the country. It's a lack of liberty, in fact, if I can resume the life in Cuba.
Okay, I don't want to get too personal, but could you tell me about your mother's relationship with Fidel?
It happened a long ago. I'm almost half a century now myself, and I think it was some type of passion between them at the beginning, before the revolution began, actually. And it was they exchanged letters while he was in jail, and that's how things happened back there.
So they never married?
No, they never married.
And does he?
Actually, I'm what they call a bastard, because I was born out of wedlock.
And he knows about you?
Of course, yes.
What do you think? Does he think that you are indeed his child?
I think you have to ask him that, but I can say yes.
What would he say about his own daughter being part of a dissident movement?
What he answered to Bernard Shaw, I think, is a journalist from CNN, he said he didn't want to get into personal things. That's what his answer is, as long as I know.
Hmm. What sort of consequences have your activities had on your mother's life and the rest of your family's life?
Well, actually, my mother is my family, because the rest of the family is from my father's side, so they are not vulnerable. But my mother has been respected, as long as I know.
Hmm. You mentioned the difficulties that many people are living today in Cuba. Paint us a picture of what it is really like. I mean, what does a family live off of in Cuba today? Are they able to make a living through agriculture, through any other means? And is it enough to feed the families?
After the Cold War finished in 1989, it was a big surprise, you know, that Cuba was a whole. Nothing has been done there economically and in any institution side. So to describe you what a family life can be, for example, they haven't been building houses for people, and four generations has to stay at the same place, which makes things very difficult in the family living issue. But beside that, there is nothing you can produce there. Cuba is living now on the basis of the money that the exile community sends to Cuba, and people are just surviving. Describe a totalitarian regime to you is quite difficult. I don't know what to say. We have the right to read one journal. We have four radio stations that empoison you ideologically. We have two TV stations working 3 and 5 hours each of them. What else? No food. Sometimes half of the day, no electricity, no transportation. I mean, it's like hell. Nothing works in my country. Nothing.
Have you ever met your father?
Of course. I wouldn't be sitting here if I hadn't.
Tell me about that. What sort of man is he when you meet him?
What sort of man? I don't know. He's a person who likes to speak by himself. He's not a listener. It's more than 20 years that I broke up my personal relation with him. So, nothing lately I can tell you.
But was it ever a father-daughter relationship?
Sometimes, yes. It was periodical. He is a night person, as you can assume. He's busy, and he was back there. The way.
Do you have any fond memories?
When I was a small child, yes.
Can you tell us, share with us any of those stories?
Well, I like to be awake at night, so I pretty much liked when he came, and he used to play like child's games, for example. With his hand, he's very practical, he knows. But I don't know the name of the games in English, I'm sorry.
In Spanish, what are they?
Yaquis and some other games with very fine little pieces of wood. The Chinese game.
Mm.
He was able to do that, I remember.
And you would do that in the evening and before you went to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So those were, for you, fond memories.
Those were fond memories, yes.
When did you realize, though, that things really weren't as idyllic there in Cuba?
When I was a child, people knew that he visited the house, and they ran me letters in order for me to get them to him. And stories were very ugly, you know. So
You would be able to see those letters.
Of course, I was able to see those letters. He wouldn't receive them, of course, again.
You and your mother were too afraid to give them to him?
No, but he didn't care. And people don't know, but from the beginning of the revolution, we had executions. We have people whose houses and properties would take off. We had families. We had the Kinder transport in Cuba, which was called Peter Pan, is much bigger than the German one. So a lot of children were sent away, and they didn't give the permission to the parents to join them outside. So I knew the tragedy since I was a child, and I was able to read. So it was like when I was 4 years old.
Did any of this tragedy touch your own life when you were growing up?
Yes, because my little sister and the person who was married to my mother left. So it was a breach.
They left for where?
to America. Mm. And that's how family began to get apart in Cuba from the beginning.
Was that a frightening experience for the rest of you?
I think that my generation is being beaten very hard. Yes, we were the subjects of the social experiments they were doing, like we were guinea pigs on that issue.
Many, many people try to escape from Cuba by boat, whatever means that they can find.
Mm-hmm.
Did you yourself go through that sort of experience?
I didn't escape in a raft, and I don't think I will be able to do that. I think that people are so desperate and so courageous to do that, I was unable. I falsified a passport and landed in Spain.
Alina Fernandez, Fidel Castro's estranged daughter, was speaking to me after landing in Rome as part of a European tour to raise awareness about the injustices in her native Cuba. We were joined in our conversation by Blanca Gonzalez, whose son, an independent journalist, had recently been jailed on a 25-year sentence for criticizing Castro's regime. Alina translates for us as Blanca takes us back to 1998, the year when Pope John Paul II made his historic visit to their country.
Cuando el Papa fue a Cuba. Eso fue maravilloso en el 98.
It was wonderful in 98.
Que visitó Cuba. Incluso visitó la provincia donde yo vivo, que es Camagüey.
He visited Cuba and went all the way to the long of the island.
Yo estuve presente allí.
She was there.
Eso fue grandioso.
There was
muchas emociones, mucha alegría.
Emotion, happiness.
Fue hope. Muy grande la visita del Papa a Cuba.
It was a
y a todas las provincias
great
que
event.
Estuvo.
Did it change anything in Cuba?
¿Cambió algo en Cuba?
En realidad, sé una anécdota de un muchacho que estaba preso muy joven en Cuba.
She knows something about some very young person incarcerated at that point.
Y él pidió su liberación y se la dieron.
And he asked for his freedom and it was given to him.
Sí.
What about religious freedom?
¿La libertad de religión la cambió?
Muy poca.
No, it's...
Eso es muy mínimo porque allá se vive con mucho terror, con mucho temor.
It's minimum because you live there with a lot of frightening and terror. And I can add that if you belong to the Communist Party, you can be Catholic or anything.
You cannot be.
No.
Las iglesias en Cuba, cuando van a hacer alguna actividad, tienen que pedirle permiso al gobierno.
Church in Cuba, when I want to give some mass or do something, they have to get the permission of the government.
Si no se lo dan, no las pueden hacer.
Atheism has probably established deep roots under such a communist regime for so many years. Do people even have an awareness about religion?
I think that people are aware of religion, but as it was forbidden, and it was like at the beginning, I'm speaking in the 60s, the church were closed down and insults were written on their doors. People got used not to believe in God. And it was the first thing they asked you from the Communist Party. So what we're speaking here is serious, and I know the Pope, he was able to change things in Poland. He was unable to do it in Cuba. Now people are allowed to celebrate Christmas, which is something but nothing at the same time.
But if they don't know the background, have the spiritual or religious background, do they really know what Christmas signifies?
I think that they are looking for any ways to express themselves and to find something for their souls. And my grandmother was a Catholic, and Cuba traditionally has been Catholic. But my grandmother had died a few years ago, and she was 98 years old. So maybe my daughter, though, came back to religion when she was 15. But it wasn't because I did her to do that. She decided by herself, or maybe younger generations are looking for that type of spiritual nourishment.
Blanca, tell me about your son who has ended up in prison. Are you, any of members of your family, able to visit him?
¿Quién lo visita?
Bueno, mi hijo se llama Normando Hernández, periodista independiente cubano.
His name is Normando Hernández, independent journalist.
Tiene 33 años.
33 years old.
Fue condenado a 25 años.
Condemned to 25 years.
Por ejercer el periodismo independiente en Cuba.
Just to write.
se encuentra muy distante de su casa.
He's far away from home.
En la cárcel que lo tienen es Santiago de Cuba,
the jail Boniatico. Is away, it's called Boniatico, is in another part of the country.
Allí lo visita su esposa y su hermana.
His wife and his sister can get to visit him.
Tiene una visita cada 3 meses, 2 horas.
One visit every 3 months for 2 hours.
Is there any chance that he might one day be given the possibility to go home before the 25 years are up?
¿Tú crees que lo liberen antes de los 25 años?
Bueno, yo pienso que sí. Yo tengo muchas esperanzas porque si no ya yo hubiera muerto. Yo pienso que Fidel no le quede ni un año más en el poder.
She is expecting Fidel not to be in power more than a year. And of course she has that hope because she would have died if he wasn't that way.
Imagínese, yo pienso que ese régimen no dure mucho más tiempo.
She thinks that the regime won't last any long.
Why?
¿Por qué? Porque ya eso está en el colapso ya. Ya es una persona muy mayor, ya prácticamente está como loco, es un decrépito.
He's collapsing, he's old, and he's not acting like he's on his mind.
Está como cuando una fiera está acorralada, que no sabe lo que va a hacer.
He's in a fierce attitude.
Do you think he fears that the end is near, and that's why he's cracking down?
¿Tú piensas que él está así porque piensa que el fin se acerca?
Por supuesto que sí.
Yes, of course. That's the way I feel.
But isn't it easy for the two of you who live in America, isn't it easier for you to be the outspoken voices? Now, maybe with this latest crackdown, fewer people are really willing to speak out, to risk their lives against this regime. Is there so much fear and so much resignation that people are just going to continue as they have for so many years?
No, they're not. I think that people down there are strong on their views. They're just on a passive position. But we have still dissidents that speak out every day. I mean, we have still independent journalists, and they're risking a lot because they know what happened to the other one. But the opposition in Cuba is, you know, everybody's in jail, actually. And
so,
we do what we can do.
Sí pienso que el pueblo quiere que él ya termine porque realmente allí quien vive es la cúpula del gobernante.
She thinks that people in Cuba want him to go away because the only people that have a normal quoted living is the people associated to him, very close to him.
Sí, como los ministros, los diplomáticos y sus familiares.
Diplomatic ministers.
Pero lo que es el resto del pueblo cubano se siente bastante oprimido.
The rest of the Cuban people is pretty oppressed.
Y ha sufrido bastante.
And had suffered a lot.
Alina, who do you think will succeed Fidel Castro?
I don't know, but he surely is down in Cuba.
What do you hope?
I hope that we will find a way to be a free and democratic country again as we were in 1959. We were the second country in Latin America. Now we are the last.
Alina Fernandez is the estranged daughter of Cuban leader Fidel Castro and author of the book Castro's Daughter, An Exile's Memoir of Cuba. Also there was Blanca Gonzalez, mother of Cuban journalist Armando Nandi, serving a 25-year jail term for speaking out against Castro's regime. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.